Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Who are they?
Who are the people?
Court of Owls. Got it.
Listen, I know that they're out there, and it's fine, but when you go into your local LCS and you see, obviously, the indie published comics of, like, the president, right? But it's not just the president. It's, like, the president with, like, a sentient penis that calls all the shots for him. Some weird, whacked out.
Was that Clinton? That was definitely Clinton, right?
Yeah. There was the one in
there was the Obama rat
that goes around fucking everyone in New York City. And I was like, what is happening?
Do you remember the Adventures of Obama and Biden? Those were interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were like basically James Bonding it around the world.
I just, do you get approached and commissioned to do these books, or is there like a sect of comic book creator that's like, man, I can't wait to, you know, write Obama issue number 3 or whatever.
Just the writer of this is like listening to our show and is like, how dare you?
Can I come on? Is probably what he's saying. But
we're gonna get a message. They're gonna be like, I need to come on. I need to say my piece about the Adventures of Obama issue 5. Yeah.
I get it. I don't know what like the order of operations upon which those books are published and born.
Steve, we're in an era where celebrity trumps everything, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And if we look at, if you go back to the start of our podcast or just around then, maybe just a little before, celebrity comic bio things, they had Amy Fisher comics and
Kim
Kardashian comics and all the rest of it. So
the Amy Winehouse comic.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
If we want to travel into some of my research interests, I will say that that kind of writing has existed since ancient history. There would be writings about, people would write fan fiction basically of like Alexander Hamilton while he was alive. And that is a true fact. Or like,
Chris,
you know, huh?
I'm going to say I have a book. It's called In Search of Dracula, which I bought in
the 70s. There you go.
Let's go further back. They had woodcuts published of Vlad the Impaler impaling people to basically tar him with, he's the worst person ever. Yet to the Romanians, he's a hero. He stopped his country being invaded by the Turks. But the propaganda, and it's the 1400s, and there's a comic book about Vlad the Impaler.
You heard it here first. Fan fiction is just propaganda. Yeah.
Could be.
Just kidding. I don't know. Real person fan fiction? Maybe it is. I don't know.
There's a deal with it, right? Real, as opposed to fanfic.
Fanfic.
Right, yeah.
Fanfic. All right, let's do this.
We're turning into Abbott and Costello now, isn't it?
Oh, we've been doing this, Steve. We've been recording.
God.
It's a bonus piece.
Well, then I should probably say hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking Comics Podcast. It's Wednesday, April 5th, and you're listening to episode number 592. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me for this week's show, obviously, are Mr. Bob Ryer.
Well, I mean, Easter's coming up. Is everyone going to watch Night of the Lepus with the attack of the giant killer mutant bunny rabbits?
Yes.
I prefer either Bunnicula Curse of the Were-Rabbit from Aardman.
Yes, yeah, okay. Either one goes there. When I was in, I'll derail everything here right now. I worked in the video store, I would annoy people no end because I'd have to work sometimes Easter, Saturday and Sunday. And I'd be showing all vampire movies. Why are you showing that on Easter, right? Like King of Kings. Well, Dracula rises from the dead too.
Great point. Well made.
Yeah. That would frost some people's pumpkins. I'm just saying.
My friend calls it Happy Zombie Jesus Day.
Okay. Love it.
Aaron Amos is here.
Just in time to finish wiping my dog down.
Whoa.
Hey, is that a euphemism too?
He's talking about his dongle again.
His dongle. I don't know if that part's going to be in the show.
It's not. So I love that people won't know what that means.
Damn it. It was pretty funny. Chris Carey is also here.
I would say that Monty Python and the Holy Grail is an Easter movie. We got a vicious attack rabbit. Yes. Perfect.
The number of the counting shall be 3.
Amazing. Speaking of amazing, we have an amazing show for you this week.
Your segue game is next level these days.
Look, I'm on top of it. I plan these.
What is
every
it
week.
That you're on top of? What are we talking about now?
I have little cue cards.
Dongles. Got it.
I have a cheat sheet of like, be clever at the 4 minutes and 17 second mark.
Wow. And you have all these planned out for whatever we're going to say. I love it. Next level. Chris, you're right. Next level.
I'll talk about gifts later on. This is one of mine, is running this podcast like a smooth vehicle. I don't know. God damn it. We have lightning rounds this week. We also have some cool trailers to talk about. There was the Blue Beetle trailer.
Yes. High Me for Life.
Yes. There was another Secret Invasion trailer that came out. There's been some cool Street Fighter news potentially that I'll talk about for all of
such a thing. Come on.
2 minutes, and who knows where that conversation will go. We're gonna talk about the GLAAD Award winners that happened over the past few days. And that's the stuff.
Have you ever
that's
seen that stuff. Movie? I love that movie.
So that's the stuff?
The stuff.
I know what you're talking about. The horror
Larry
movie, right?
Cohen's made this movie. It's Michael Moriarty, Garrett Morris. It's from the late 80s. It's about a killer yogurt-y dessert that takes over the world.
Of course it is.
I don't know where to go from there.
You should see the movie. It's a wonderfully bizarre piece of satire. It's all I'm going to say.
Sounds delightful.
It's the stuff.
You know what I'm surprised they haven't remade yet? The Blob.
They did in the 80s.
Well, they did in the 80s, but I'm saying since then.
Okay. I'd go with that. The first two were both great.
I feel like they did, actually. I think like with all the color.
All the CG nonsense that you have now, you could do something epic with that, I would think. I don't know. Bring back the Blob. That's what I say.
Let's make that our title for the episode. Bring back the Blob.
I'll write it down.
And play the in the 50s, the original one was Steve McQueen. Well, he was Stephen McQueen then. He was trying to be an actor. There's a theme song that actually has lyrics from the 58 movie. It's Beware of the Blob. It leaps and creeps and grows. It's a wonderful little tune with lyrics by Burt Bacharach's partner's brother, Mac David. So you should play that under the episode. The whole thing.
There you go.
For like 2 hours. Yeah.
I'm sure that the various podcast providers will love that show gets flagged, if it gets flagged.
Well, yeah, there's that. It's not public domain yet. Give another 10 years.
Yes, indeed. I think we should get into some comics, because I think this show's going to go off the rails, and I kind of want to get on the rails as much as I can.
We're off the rails already, so yeah.
We started off the rails, so that we can only go up.
All right. I would like for Aaron to do a lightning round.
Sure. Okay, so I got two books. I didn't really read a lot this week. Well, I did, but I didn't really have a lot that really spoke to me this week. So here we are. All right.
The pool was shallow this week.
The pool was very shallow. It really, really was. I did read Strange Academy Finals number 5, actually, as obviously you wouldn't expect me to read that, so I didn't want to disappoint. We have, I believe this is the second to last issue, if I'm not mistaken, but we have a scenario where the students are preparing for commencement, as Dr. Voodoo has said, because of the danger and the tasks that each student has to deal with each year. They want to celebrate them every year instead of waiting for the end of the 4 years. So they have a commencement every year, and this is this year's commencement. Oh. Kids are feeling relaxed. Everyone seems to be relaxed because obviously you have some of the greatest magical beings on the planet putting all kinds of spells and barriers and protections around the school. So they feel pretty comfortable bringing their parents and such there. We get to see some of the students greet their parents. We get to see some of the students sort of relate to each other, sort of in a reminiscing of the year that they've had. But we also get to see Doyle's mom, who, if you remember, I don't think we've seen throughout the entirety of the series. And we get some background and some history as to how Doyle, how Dormammu and Doyle's mom did the thing. And it's not what you think. It's not what you think.
It's the thing than that thing.
So they did the thing, but it's not what you think. It's Dormammu's, Doyle sort of birth is not the type of birth that you would expect. And it was actually interesting to see that because as small of an aspect of that of the story it was, it does actually shift and change a little bit about how you see him. But yeah. Also, it gives you a little bit of insight into how the story has played for it. I'm being specific not to spoil a certain thing because I don't want to draw too much of a corollary.
Well, he says something to, he addresses pretty much everyone there. And he's like, you were all so focused on one side of me. You never thought about the other side of me.
Ooh. He said, they never asked. Yeah. They just made the assumption. But it does inform a little bit about Emily and what's going on with her. I think if you sort of read between the lines. Anyway, we have this scenario where, without going into a lot of detail, there is obviously the arrival of Emily. And as they say, she's in full supervillain mode, doing all the speechifying and believing herself to be the right one, even though we have seen student after student after student, show her that she wasn't. All the students that left her, except for one, have all returned to the school, realizing that she's gone off the deep end. But she's leaning more into, that role now, believing that she's right. The students were ready, though, to a degree. And they leveled the playing field and created this interesting dynamic of, okay, you thought you came here with all the things you needed to basically wipe us out. You thought ahead of us, but we're not idiots. And again, this is really a scenario where the students do really become the teachers in this story. And I'm kind of excited to see where it goes, especially considering how it ended, because I'm curious to see how far Emily is willing to go. There was a character that showed up at the very end that could sort of shift the dynamic of things.
Yeah.
So next book, Waller versus Wildstorm number 1. I'm sorry. I should probably go back and say Strange Academy. Same team, Scotty Young, Umberto Ramos. Waller versus Wildstorm number 1. I will say before I go through the team here, I'm not a super familiar, I think I've said before, of the Wildstorm history. I just have enough to be dangerous, but not enough to go deep, into the lore. Yep. Spencer Ackerman, Evan Narciss, Jesus Marino, and Michael Atea, I believe his name is. This book actually starts, and I understand why they're doing this, with stationing Lois Lane and Gamora. Gamora may sound familiar to you guys if you're watching, if you were reading Superman, Son of Kal-El. And she's trying to uncover whatever the next big mystery, whatever her next big story is going to be. When she's contacted, well, she starts off by, interviewing a bunch of freedom fighters who do the freedom fighter thing. I get the impression that Lois is a little bored with it. But she then, when she gets back to her hotel, contacted by a mysterious stranger who's looking to give her a really big story. Turns out this guy is Jackson King. If you're someone who follows a Wildstorm lore, you probably know who that is. Jackson King was also known as Battalion, a member of Stormwatch. King basically wants to tell Lois the story because he wants her to publish it. He wants to publish it because he believes that publishing the story will bring down the person in the organization that he believes is basically rotting from the inside out. We begin to realize later it may be a little bit more personal than that. It probably is more personal, but I guess you can kill two birds with one stone. Why not? As I said, King was a member of Stormwatch, but also had affiliations with Checkmate.
Oh.
Enter Amanda Waller. We meet her through some flashbacks. She is, when you first meet her, she is this up-and-coming sort of station chief at this sort of black ops station off the books, doing things that, you know, protecting things that, you know, probably should never see the light of day. But she pretends as though she's befriending Jackson King, and really, in the way that only Amanda Waller can do, she essentially just turns on him on a dime and gets the better of him. And this sort of begins to launch her ascension into the ranks that she's in now. He's trying to sort of stop that. He's looking to use the press to do this. It's getting a little, you can see though, it's getting a little bit, there's a little bit more going on than what he is letting on. Lois is smart enough to figure it all out, or at least begin to figure it out, that this is a little bit more personal, that he wasn't really trying to do the right thing, but he was really just trying to get revenge. But again, if you can kill two birds with one stone, why not? That's kind of where the story ends. We see at the end there's a little bit of a cliffhanger because there's a character that everyone will know who shows up, who at this point looks like they're probably going to take out a few people. And they are a well-known character. And if you know who this character is, you know that the chances are if they put their mind to it, there's probably only one person they probably wouldn't be able to take out, and that's probably Batman.
Galactus can't take out Batman. We know that.
Well, there you have it. Well, take, you know, all guesses are valid, I guess. Is what I'm saying. So, this book, for me, I like the story. I like the way they're using Lois Lane out of the gate. I liked, you know, where you know, it's going in terms of the taking it out of the normal superhero-y type thing where there's some big alien coming or blah, 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 blah. I like that it is giving some nods to the Stormwatch authority sort of age. The art sort of leaned back into that DC style, that DC house thing, and it really was a struggle to look past that to sort of see this story. I really wish they'd chosen another artist. I don't necessarily know off the top of my head who would have been great for this. I just don't feel as though this artist was the one. It seemed very pedestrian and sort of underdeveloped, maybe even rushed. I don't know. I didn't love it. I really didn't love it. So, you know, that might hinder you as you're going through the pages of it. But again, I do notice that DC has been using these stories that are a lot, that, well, at least the ones I've been leaning into, are a lot less tights and flight and all that stuff, and a little bit more intrigue and suspense. And that's sort of giving you this here. It's setting up something that I think might be a great story that's behind the scenes of all the tights and flight stuff. So we'll see where it goes. I will give it I wasn't going to say maybe a second issue. I might give it an arc to sort of see where it goes. I maybe they'll switch artists or something at some point, but you know, we'll push through one way or another and give the story a chance. And that is my very quick lightning round.
I'm a huge Lois fan, obviously, from way back. Did you read the Greg Rucka mini with Mike Perkins? I think it was Mike Perkins?
Oh, it's my favorite.
A couple years back? Right?
I love it. Love it.
Wonderful Lois series where it was a lot of ground level stuff. I mean, Clark showed up here and there and some stuff did, but it was all about Lois's smarts and intuition and reporting style and killer for me.
He pretty much showed up just for her to be like, honey, don't meddle. And he's like, you're right, babe. And then flies away.
Right. He'd be on the balcony and just then disappear. Yeah.
I know. Loved it. I love it. He was playing the love interest role in most comics.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. I feel like
it was called Enemy of the People, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, I did. I may have read it. I'm actually putting some art in the chat for you guys to sort of see what I'm talking about. Cool. Again, great radio. great radio.
But this is just us hanging out, and sometimes people listen, right? That's what the show is.
Yeah, you have it. Like 10,000 of them. But yeah, it's okay. We're not thinking about that.
Yeah, that's exactly.
There you go.
This, I just kind of like this art. You said you didn't like this art?
I didn't love it. I didn't love it. I just, for some reason, I just don't love this art. It just...
I'm seeing rippling muscles and a lot of forearm. I'm confused, Aaron.
How can there be shadows coming from every direction in a room?
Are they in Gotham?
No, they're in Gamora. They're in the tropics.
Okay, that is strange.
Right. No, it is Hollywood lighting.
They have the same lighting situation that you do. What are you talking about? They've got lights directly
like a 360 light or something like that. I don't know. I didn't love it. I didn't love it.
Aaron, awful,
but pedestrian, I think, is the word you used. That's exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know, Aaron. Did you see the forearms though? Like, I think you're missing.
I see the forearms, the quads, and the calves.
Thighs. Yeah, the quads.
The thighs are looking tight.
I see. Hold on. There's some more stuff here. You know, again, great radio.
Hey.
some more radio. Some more.
I mean, I don't see his dongle. If that's what you mean.
Well, this is a Black Label book, so what do you want?
Oh, you never know. His dongle may be coming.
It could be coming.
Now, Amanda's what in this?
So she's like,
antagonist, where we...
She is, in this issue, she is clearly the antagonist.
Okay.
But I will say, she doesn't show up in present tense in this issue. It's only in flashbacks from the story that he's telling Lois. So, but she's in that flashback and in the catch up since, she's done some shit. she's done some unsavory shit. He's not loving her. I put another one in the chat if you want
to see his forearms again, looking great.
So, you know,
in the last issue he just grabs at his neck and rips the mask off and it's Waller underneath the whole time?
It's been her the whole time.
That would be cool.
I wouldn't be shocked, but there's one last thing that I think you guys will appreciate.
She's been going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
See? You never know.
She's looking good.
But no, I mean, from this perspective of the story, though, I do think this. I don't want to downplay the story. I think the story is good and is a direction, you know, considering how we talked about DC last year and sort of having all these things that were overlapping and not really know which direction they were going in and all that jazz. I think it's good to tell this type of sort of super spy mystery
ground level.
Like we said, enough with source walls breaking and crisis and all that stuff. So they seem to be going back into that. So I appreciate it from that perspective, but you know, what can you do? I guess you can't have everything.
I don't think this is so bad. I kind of like the second panel more than the first.
I don't know. I'm into it.
Oh.
I dig the shirt. This is going to sound, I don't know how this is going to come off, but like,
I'm excited to tell you how it comes off.
I like it when that right arm is bad.
That right arm is God. I'm sorry.
I'm not talking about the arms. I'm talking about the way the shirt hangs.
How it hangs, Steve.
I would challenge you to do that. I'm sorry, great radio. That angle with your elbow, wrist, hand, and present your hand in that way without shattering your hamate bone.
Our official Slut Era correspondent Bronwyn has agreed that this is some peak Slut Era behavior with these forearms. So
okay.
Well, you can see Jackson has very, very strong words for Lois in the last panel that I put there.
My.
Again, awesome radio. Awesome radio.
Yeah, we need to get away from this, I think.
So there you go. You know, this is taunting them into checking it out. Listen, who knows? Maybe I'll put a panel or two on Insta and I'll just delete the...
I need you to just put a panel and just... here, I'll make it for you. Just a panel of with zoomed in on the forearms.
There you go.
That's all they get.
I want to hear more about Strange Academy.
I've got a question about Strange Academy, if I may get us away from all of this.
Yes.
Do you think, Aaron, without saying too much, do you think that this Strange Academy finals ends with like a stern finger wagging? by new characters that have been introduced, or is there actually going to be like some kind of epic climax?
I think some. I want to believe. I'm of two minds.
Don't we all?
I want to believe that someone's going to buy it. Oh. That there's going to be a sacrifice, and I think I have an idea who it's going to be.
Oh,
and I think if it is this person, it is going to be gut-wrenching. Just gut-wrenching. It's not of the two main ones. It's the one that had the most peaks and valleys in terms of their emotional arc throughout the entirety. And now find themselves sort of just hanging out at the school with no real reason to be there.
Yeah. I gotcha.
I think it's going to be this person. But at the same time, Scotty Young has really found clever ways of throwing that sort of reconciliatory emotion into it. Sort of like I'm this sort of art of forgiveness. He's really figured out how to weave that into the story. As you've seen, as each one of the kids who initially abandoned Doyle in the school have shown up, and the way that he has individually written their forgiveness arcs, and have them all come back in and be embraced and welcomed and sort of growing that bond. Yeah. So it could be a scenario where there's this massive forgiveness of Emily, at which case I will spit in the face of Scotty Young at NYCC next year. But, you know, I'm hoping it's more the first. I'd rather be gut-wrenching than to forgive her right about now, because I'm still a little salty. Yeah.
There was a moment in, I don't know if it was in 5, it might have been in 4, whatever the issue was, where they were having, they were trying to make up for the damage they'd caused, and they were having like a carnival of sorts.
Yeah.
And
carnival of souls.
Three of the kids, Emily and I think Eirik and Desi, show up to this carnival thing, and they approach Calvin with a box. And when he opens the box and sees what's inside, like I did the great catch up because I knew that you were going to be talking about this, and I had to be here for this. So I read 1 through 5 last night. Of everything that I've read, that was one of the moments that really, really stuck out to me, of them going to him with the box, him opening it, and almost being like a drug pusher, which he has been for the last little while, but them tempting him with getting his magic back. And it just seemed like such a cruel thing to do.
Exactly. But I think that's the point that I was making. That was also how, as a reader, you get to experience his forgiveness arc and know that he's genuine in his desire, having learned from what he's done, you know. But at the same time, it really did sort of seal the deal in my like disgust for Desi and Emily at that point. Cause I'm like, damn, you went there.
Yeah.
He like threw it all the way back in his face, like right there. Not only did you did two things at once. You tried to tempt him into doing something that was clearly evil, while at the same time throwing back in his face that he had done something that could be construed as clearly evil already to his quote unquote friends.
Yeah. So, salt in the wound.
Yeah. So yeah, she's not a good person. Huh? So she's like a young Wanda.
Hey! So was Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box? Is that what's in the box?
What's in the box?
Chris, this image you just sent is incredible.
You're welcome.
We need to post this on the socials. No, this is behind the scenes. This is too much.
We can't spoil too much, but I do want to ask, is Doyle now related to Clea?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. Well, because we're into Dormammu and the Dark Dimension and Uma and the rest of
I was hesitant to say that because the method of his birth is not what you think it is. It's not the way you think it is.
All right.
So, yeah.
He was hatched. Yeah. Got it. hatched.
No, it's the kind of thing you don't want to spoil.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I'm really trying to somebody's just, so I'm like, I'm not
method of birth
it.
Is I'll something you don't want to spoil. I'm horrified. So,
I will wait for the trade because you guys talking about Strange Academy and we read all of it leading up to our best of episodes. It was incredible.
So now this is great.
The finals. Will there be a post-grad Strange Academy will be the next question.
I don't think so. Based on their talk at NYCC. Because they were there. They were there at NYCC and talking. And based on their talk, they're like, nope, this is it.
Man.
I was just like, dear Lord. I think I even went to the table and asked Humberto Ramos. And he's like, as far as I know.
There's no way that they can leave all of these characters to obscurity.
They may not leave them to obscurity. They may find themselves similar to the way like Nico finds herself in other books.
Nico.
Nico is actually in this book.
Oh, is she?
She doesn't have a speaking role, but she's there. You can see her.
Yeah, she's there. Man. Just chill it out.
Nico, I think that's you. Oh, bye, Nico.
Well, we got to keep in mind, there's like almost every magical being in the Marvel universe who's sort of there. So not everyone can get a speaking role. I think Wanda's there. She doesn't get a speaking role.
No, she does.
Does she?
She teaches a class.
No. I'm talking about this issue.
Oh, and maybe not this issue, but she's totally there.
Nico's gotten speaking roles in previous issues.
Oh, good.
But not in this one. So
everybody's there.
But what is her name? The Colossus's sister.
Ileana.
She is the funniest thing walking when it comes to how she addresses Emily. She's like, I know we're not supposed to like or something like that to students, but I'm just about done with this bitch.
She's the mistress of limbo. She can do what she wants.
Right? You gotta watch out for
she went like full on. I'm like, okay. I loved it.
I'm not gonna lie to you, Aaron. I've never heard magic referred only as Colossus's sister, so my brain blanked for a minute.
I couldn't remember.
Put some
her name.
Respect on magic's name.
I remembered her real name, but I couldn't remember
Colossus's
her code name.
Like she isn't just the most powerful X-Men.
Here's the funny thing. It is literally basically magic. And that's literally what this whole damn thing is about. And that's what I couldn't remember.
So, mine is really cute, but it's magic with a K. So, you know, it's different.
I'm sitting here like looking at her. I'm like, the chick with the big sword. Who is he?
Yeah.
She's like, who is she?
Look who's forgetting names now.
I was like, man. Do you really want to compare that list to you?
Really?
Forget never mind. I'm not gonna say
never
it.
Never mind.
Like, all right. We can go down that branch of the tree if you want.
I could say it to the group off air, but I'm not gonna say it here.
I'm excited to hear it after.
Right. I'm holding back everybody.
The After Dark talking comics.
We should do one of those.
That could be a Patreon episode. Talking comics after dark.
The real, who we really are behind the microphone.
Right. All that stuff we're holding
back.
Just
this hateful troll sitting like an alien.
Just go for it. Yeah.
I moved away to the US for a reason.
You weren't allowed in.
Yeah, they finally were on to me, and I was like, I gotta get out of here.
Is that or Heaven's Gate? We had to go.
Oh yes,
Nike's
speaking of
death row.
Heaven's Gate.
Speaking of gates, I hear that comics are a gateway to awesome stories.
Oh my god!
Nope.
That's segway champ.
You're trying too hard.
I need more alcohol.
Speaking of Heaven's Gates, let's all get taken away by the next lightning round.
Damn.
Bob.
Oh, I'm stuck with this. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You're the Heaven's Gate of this podcast.
Yes. I look a lot like that guy who ran Heaven's Gate. So there you go.
I'm now going to have to decide who every who represents each cult. So I'm going to work on that over here.
So who's Jim Jones?
Who's the Jim Jones of our podcast?
Anywho, I've been off the main Harley Quinn book since, I guess, Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti left. I picked up number 28 because Teenie Howard and Sweeney Boo are the new creative team. And that's not to slight lower Steve Wands, who also does a great job. Here, Harley's in trouble, as with Ivy out of town, she's been into some mischief-making. And that doesn't sit well with law enforcement, needless to say. But instead of jail, she's assigned community service as a teacher at Gotham Community College.
Yeah. Rough job. Rough.
Trouble follows, as does Two-Face.
Ooh.
Their fight turns when... Nah, not going to tell you. except to say there might be a, in quotes, crisis brewing.
Ba-ba-bum.
Look, I had a great time with this. It's really in keeping with what we're seeing in the animated series and the Harley Screws Up the Multiverse mini they're doing. So I'm in for as long as this creative team hangs in. And by the way, there's a backup feature by Erica Henderson.
Ooh.
So extra value right there. Clobberin' Time, number one. Steve Scorsch, Brian Valenza, and Joe Sabino. It's an epic kaiju battle book.
Ooh.
Ben and the Hulk are transported to a strange realm where the locals are being besieged by a horde. Hordes? I guess hordes is the plural here, right? I don't want to make
Hordai.
Hordai could be
a murder of hordes.
There's a bunch of giant monsters attacking this poor little community. And look, nothing earth-shattering, but it's just always a treat to see the Hulk and Ben just cut loose and do some monster bashing. And there's some other stuff going on too. And we're moving through this mini. He'll have a lot of guest stars, but yeah. I got the job I have because I had to answer a question. Who is your favorite fictional character? Ben Grimm.
Aw.
What's the whole Beauty and the Beast thing? And as someone who's not exactly, you know, Cary Grant, you gotta adopt these things. Anywho, my next book is It's Jeff, number one by Kelly Thompson and the Guru Hero team.
Yes.
It was absolutely delightful. You'll laugh your tuchus off unless you're dead, frankly, at Jeff the Baby Landshark's antics. He interacts with virtually every hero in the Marvel Universe and a couple of villains, too. And there are even some, dare I say, emotional beats, too. Look, Kelly Thompson created Jeff back in the West Coast Avenger days. And honestly, it seemed then like it's just a throwaway character kind of thing at the time. But this little guy has captured many more hearts than mine based on what we see on the old interwebs. And thankfully, there are more Jeff adventures to come. The whole second season is, in fact, over on Marvel Unlimited. So if you're or Marvel Infinity, whatever they call that nonsense, if you're intrigued. So there's a lot more reading for everybody else. But I want more pet Avengers. I want a whole new miniseries that's got Jeff and Lockjaw and all our friends. And
oh my God, yes.
Yeah, I'm done. Let's all chat. Let's all chat.
Oh my God.
Sounds to me like Clobbering Time was just about gentrification.
Could be.
Record scratch.
What was that? Yes.
That was a mic drop moment. We all had to give it its airspace. Like,
yeah, who's like,
let it set. Let it set. Oh, wow. Yeah. Process that for a minute, listeners.
He's like, tiny, like hordes of people taking over these tiny poor little towns.
I've never
heard
a louder record scratch in my head ever.
I think we all just collectively went, oh, it's like it was like we were in class and you're that like rock star professor that's like, I'm about to blow your minds.
What is that the thing where they pause it and they zoom in and it was like, this is the moment where he knew he had fucked up.
Yeah, yes.
We're all like, whoa, hey. Galaxy brain that we just witnessed.
Continue, please.
It is what it is.
Tell me about the gentrification.
Tell us. Lay down some gentrification knowledge on us.
I just did. Go ahead,
Bob. So it's like when they were trying to destroy Penn Station. What was her name? Jane Jacobs was trying to stop them from knocking down Penn Station and be a Madison Square. It's that I let's change neighborhoods. Okay, so Ben Grimm is a social warrior. We always knew that.
That's very him. I love it. Yes. Can we talk about Sweeney Boo's art for like 1,200 hours, Bob?
Oh, always, always. And she's such a lovely person to go with everything else. But the artwork in this book,
once I
saw her name on it, I had to buy this. And it's a different level for her even.
It really, I love the panel they used to promote this with Harley kind of astral projecting. Have you seen this one? It's so good. I love it so much. She's incredible. An incredible woman artist that's contributed a lot to Gotham. And that was very pointed, I know, but some people will know what I'm talking about.
it's a wonderful book with all the things you'd want from a Harley book. It's still the Harley Ivy thing. We've got a lot of references to that. Yeah. So it ties into the animated series and what we're doing in the other books.
Yes.
But Harley, after Amanda and Jimmy left, and I know we always talk about, you know, the Wicked and Divine, and we interviewed them, but we had Amanda and Jimmy on the show just before their Harley launch, which in essence recreated Harley Quinn that we know now. And it's been a while since the book felt like that to me. And here she's funny and profane and goofy all at the same time and still incredibly smart. That combination is hard to do, but Teenie Howard and Sweeney here, my gosh.
Oh,
love every second of this.
Teenie is like the queen of Gotham right now, and I'm so proud of her. Woman. Like, get it. Oh, I love it. After looking at the Sweetie Boo art for Harley, I just want like a Gotham tarot card deck with just all the like Gotham ladies. That's what I want from her. Make that Sweeney Boo, make it.
She'll be at the New York Comic Con. You might be able to ask her for a set.
Oh, yeah. I'll commission 42 cards.
It'll only be like $40,000. It'll be great.
Right. It'll cost more than my grad school education.
Yeah, but which would give you more pleasure?
Oh, obviously the tarot card deck. We know this spot. But that's a low bar, so, you know.
Yeah. Back to Jeff. Let's go to some Jeff. What?
I could jump in for a minute here. Just like you said, it's absolutely delightful. I had a lot of fun with it. I loved, in particular, the pool episode.
Oh yes,
where everybody is like everybody, or is it the beach? Which is the beach episode? Maybe where every single Marvel character under the sun is there.
No, that's the pool where they're all scared he's swimming through the pool with the fin out.
Oh my god!
When he gets to the beach, he dons a dolphin costume.
Yeah, he's a little smarter about it. Gets the point of everybody. It's positively adorable. We had big news come in from the Marvel Snap front that Jeff the Landshark is now a card in Marvel Snap.
Oh, wait, I got to see this.
With his own variants. I know, it's almost enough to get me to go back in.
Really?
Well, I kind of miss it a little bit now.
Right before the show, you were like, I'll never play it again.
I know.
Kelly Thompson she apparently plays Marvel Snap an awful lot. And she put up a post earlier today on Twitter, and she's like, hey, Marvel Snap, you're going to just, like, give me the Jeff the Landshark card, right? You're going to make sure I get it, right? As if they could, like, fix the algorithm to give her certain cards, which would be amazing.
I'm sure they can.
They could put it in a pack and send it to her account, no problem. Will they, though?
Look at these. Question. They're so cute. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
It's Jeff.
Jeff.
Absolutely adorable. Okay, Bob, my question for you, Harley Quinn wise. I have all of the Harley Quinn stuff through the DC app, but I'm like woefully behind on it. How reader friendly was going on to this new arc and this new team?
I'm going to tell you, not 100%, I'll go 90% if you've seen the animated series. If you kind of know who Harley is, you can jump right in here. It's a Harley Ivy thing.
Okay, I never saw season even though she's three. Not I've in only this seen book. One and two.
Okay, she's not. Now, Ivy's not in this book at all, but this is the Harley you've seen through that series.
Okay.
Fold in some DC stuff because we get to some crises and multiversey things. And if you read this, you're going to want to read Harley Quinn Screws Up the DC Universe.
Oh, which was so fun anyway.
Yes, right. So I've been out of Harley for a very, very long time in terms of the mainline book. It got very dark and very Gotham-centric, very into the regular stuff, as opposed to when, you know, Amanda and Jimmy had the scatapult on the roof of the funhouse at Coney Island. They were throwing poo at the DC offices. The book hasn't been that in a long time. And this gives me that Harley that I love reading about. Come on, it's a scatapult. That's a great name.
He said poo.
I said poo.
Okay, children.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What was that? Hey, Arnold laugh?
Yes, that was definitely so.
Oh my God, I can't.
We're all doing great, listeners. Clearly, we're all fine.
You'll love start at 28 with Harley, and I think we're at least 5 issues that they'll be doing together. Hopefully it's more, because this was glorious.
Yeah. Well, sounds good. I'll join you in about a month.
Okay.
when it hits infinite.
Does anybody here have Marvel Unlimited?
No.
I do.
You do? Okay.
I sadly have them all.
You gotta catch them all.
Do you
Boom Unlimited?
How many months do you have to wait between books?
I think it's 3 months now. It was 6 originally. I think it's 3 months now.
Okay.
It is, yeah. I think it's 3.
All right.
I open the DC app, and I just want you all to know it's a white screen.
Wow, look, it's very nice. White.
I'm like, wow, okay. So I was gonna look and see if any Harley Quinn was up, but it's like, no. Actually, what if you don't?
I don't know if I could do Marvel Unlimited and wait the 3 months. I have to look inside myself and find out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For the back issues, it's great. For new stuff, 3 months is a haul.
Yeah, I was going to say, it depends on what you're trying to do. I think you did the Secret Invasion catch up. So for something like that, it's awesome. To go back and like catch a whole run. I think I went back and caught like a whole like Hickman run of like Future Foundation at one point. You know, for stuff like that, it's awesome because just before this version of She-Hulk came out, I went back and read one of some of the previous runs. So for that, it's great. And I think I will also say, similar to DC, sometimes they will throw out a new issue without announcing that they're throwing out a new issue. So you'll see a number, like a current issue out there that month, and there's no rhyme or reason behind it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I usually, you know, I probably use DC more these days, but I think I usually find myself going back and doing like historical deep dives rather than, you know, catching up on something.
Right.
Like I said, when we were talking about the Laura Kinney book, you know, I went back and sort of skimmed through a little bit of that. Just to get some history. So it depends on how you're going to use it. I don't know if I would say, for the purposes of what you do, what DC, you know, universe, let the sunshine in, whatever that is now, whatever you're let doing the there.
Sunshine. Well, we're doing the fifth dimension now, Ken, spider web. I love it. So,
I don't
DC
know if it
616,
would be,
you know? Yeah,
like, I don't know if it would be. It would have that value, because you have impulse issues, and I don't know if you'd be able to wait for. You know, 3 months.
Wow. Yes.
You have issues with Impulse the character as well. That really, you've never talked about on the show, but
you would buy an issue before. If it was something that you really wanted to read, I couldn't see you waiting that 3 months. So you'd end up buying that issue.
We're over here suffering in DC Infinite Land. I just deleted the app, re-downloaded it, opened it, and it's still a white screen.
Oh, Lord.
I will say,
off topic at the same time, is Marvel doing a better job protecting LCS owners by putting the 3 months out there than the fact that you could wait a month and then not have to buy a book from a store?
Nope. You're probably the DC end of thing.
I'll tell you, as someone, and this is part of my problem, as someone who currently has over 100 titles in my to-be-read DC Universe, oof, Infinite, Toy Story, whatever. I am a little concerned about the pile-up. Like, this is a me thing. This is not an everybody thing. I'm sure there are people who just devour books and use the app, you know,
Bronwyn,
to its fullest.
Your wife.
Yeah. But I find that because I know that they're just, they're there, it's becoming another, like, its own digital to-be-read pile. And if I were to go the Marvel route, I would just end up forgetting about things that I was reading and enjoying. And then I look back and there's, like, 9 issues of them.
Sure, sure, sure.
I will also say what I find myself doing, and Bob's witnessed me do this, because Bob has watched my evolution during New York Comic Con over the last decade.
Yes,
I think we probably attended every one over the last decade together.
Yeah.
He's watched me sort of go from skimming through every box looking for, like, old trades to basically say, well, that's Marvel. I got it digitally on Marvel Unlimited. Oh, that's DC. Oh, I got it digitally on, you know, DC. So now I'm usually looking for, like, an Image or something else that's sort of, yeah, a little bit more prestige, if you want to call it that, and sort of in the sense that it's not something you're going to find hanging around there. And that's kind of how I end up, you know, with other things. That's how I ended up at remember that Ray Comics booth that we went to, Bob? And,
yes.
And, you know, I ended up with that and really enjoyed that. We got the Tuskegee Airs book that Carolyn and myself ended up getting. You know,
the Golden Girls book at the back end of...
exactly.
Yep.
The Golden Girls books. So, you know, because I save myself time by simply saying, well, I could get this trade, but I know I could just go back to my hotel right now and, you know, hook up to the Wi-Fi and pull it up digitally on this app. And, you know, so it's not the same. Unless it's like what's Marvel's version of Black Label?
Marvel Knights?
Thank you. Marvel Knights. They usually don't have that on Unlimited. Well, at least they didn't before. I haven't checked lately.
Yeah, so, I think I'll stick with my current plan. I just read too many damn things and not enough things.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just goes around and around and around.
That's sad. Yeah, at the same time, I also have Comixology Unlimited.
Oh.
I haven't signed into my Comixology account in years, I don't think. I don't know what happened.
They miss you. They miss you, Bob. They miss you.
No, they don't. I never really bought anything. I bought the weirdest of weird things that stores didn't have. It's like, oh, or Carolyn sent me a couple. Some oddball Batman Beyond books that I needed to read. It's like, oh, cool.
Oh, I love the Batman Beyond books. Oh, my God.
Barbara Gordon is police commissioner, and it's cool stuff.
Sexy, Silver Fox police commissioner?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love the ones where Tim Drake and Terry switch places. That's one of my favorite Batman Beyond ones.
I don't think I've read that one. I may have to see if I can get that.
Oh, it's good. It's called, I think it's Batman Beyond 2.0. So Terry's, like, in the past in Gotham, and Tim becomes Batman Beyond. It's great. It's real good.
I think I read, like, 3 different... are three different versions, but I was getting confused because I couldn't tell which order they were going in, like which one was.
Oh, I don't know that they're connected. I've read them. Yeah. They're just, like, all over the place.
3 of them, and it's like, okay, I don't know which one was supposed to come first, but hey, we'll run with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun though. I enjoyed them.
All right, Chris, I am gonna have you go last.
Ooh. Oh. Whoa, confuse it. The bait and switch.
Yes.
That way you can lead us into the news with the GLAAD Awards.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, look at you with your segues. The master is in the house.
But they pay
his superhero identity or super villain.
The segue?
The segue king.
He or also rides. He rides on a segue into the scene.
Yes, like Paul Blart, mall cop or whatever, yes.
Oh, man, if only I was as cool as Paul Blart.
Oh, you are so every
much,
bit
so
as cool.
Much cooler.
Walmart.
Much,
are you? Oh, come on! Don't be mean. That's not nice.
It's true.
you know it's not.
Kevin James. He lives in Stony Brook.
I met Kevin James.
Steve, I'm not teasing you. You are every bit as cool as Paul Markov.
Him and Michelle Monaghan. I interviewed them both in New York City in person for the movie Pixels that came out, the Adam Sandler movie, and. Michelle Monaghan and Kevin James both told me that I looked like a young Russell Crowe. And I blacked out. I forgot all my questions.
Yeah, what?
I was like, what is happening?
I see it. Right, I see it.
I talked to Kevin James about being from Long Island. He freaked out. It was fun.
I still think you were as cool. You are the Paul Blart Mall Cop of my heart, Steve.
Oh.
Lovely. I like that.
Thank you.
I like it as well. All right. I don't have a creative team written down for this, but let me get some lightning here.
Thank you.
The Ambassadors, number one. I kind of teased this last week, probably not very well, but here we are. Mark Millar and I think Frank Quietly is his name.
Yes,
it is. Okay, good.
He draws puffy people. That guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. The guy who likes to draw lots of bits and pieces.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Yeah. Governments worldwide are trying to manufacture their own superheroes to use as weapons against enemy forces. But they've all failed. Some have even tried to fake it, but it didn't work. Now, a billionaire in China has cracked the code, and they're about to go public. Bum, bum, bum. So Chun-Hee Chung, scientist, teacher, disruptor, wanted to manufacture superpowers for the good of humankind, but all her husband and partner wanted to do was sell the tech to the rich. She wants the most altruistic people from different countries to... I should probably back up. I'm trying not to give away too much, but she figures out a way to give herself superpowers. She has manufactured them. She has created a data bank that she can access and, let's just say, download into herself. So basically superpowers as information.
Nice.
And she has given herself like a life 2.0 as the world's first legit superhero. Like, they go through the history of America trying to outfox the Soviets by inventing their own Superman, and everybody's rushing to make their own super soldiers. And so there was a time where America was like filming movies and using like these astronomical budgets from those times and special effects to make it look real. And they were going to run it on the news every night for however long to try and convince the neighboring countries that they had their own superhero, but they just couldn't do it. They just couldn't get it right. And so after a while they gave up. And they kind of stopped chasing the dream. And then so many years later, this woman comes up and she's like, I've got it all figured out. And not only have I figured it out, I've been doing it for a while. And you had no idea.
That's how you do it. That's a mic drop, right?
It's she's basically, I have all this evidence. I have all of this recorded. There are select people that I've let into my facility and my city. And this is real. This is happening. And I'm not going to give it to the rich. I'm not going to sell it to the government. I want six other people from six different countries to come to me and show me why they deserve these powers to protect their countries and to actually have order and unity throughout the world. And I guess with the goal of creating some kind of world peace. And by the end of this first issue, the governments, particularly the United States government, they're shitting themselves. Because what happens when you can't co-opt that technology because it's privatized like that, and they are clearly, very clearly not going to give it up. And they don't have these lofty goals of selling it off to some kind of government or, I don't know, some kind of billionaire for mass production. And so the governments are freaking out because they're like, what happens when the police are being policed? And what happens when we can't do what we do because there is a superpower flying in the sky waiting for us to do wrong? That is its own kind of enforcement. It's wild. I'm leaving a lot of it out Craig Quitely does this absolutely amazing, amazing job of depicting this kind of gruesome, gritty, and very detailed world. Like I mentioned the bits before, there's a couple of panels where almost like a biplane goes into the water. And just the page of that plane hitting the water and all the droplets of water shooting off the nose of the plane and into the air and kind of like at your camera view in the panel is just absolutely gorgeous. There's some really interesting stuff happening here. I'll be very curious to see what the interviews are like when she interviews everybody who potentially wants powers. And they're, you know, because it's a heroes versus villains type thing, there might be a little bit more going on toward the end to screw up these perfect plans. And I thought it was a really good number one issue, and I dug it a lot. And I'm curious if, Aaron, did you read it?
Yes, I did. I didn't want you to hear my straw clinking against the glass, so I muted myself.
Smart.
So, you know, there you have it. Yeah, I did read it. So I think, just as a correction, I think it was in South Korea and not China. So just went and put that little clarification. I just went back and looked.
Ah, thank you.
She actually named it codename Korea as well. So there's that. But no, I thought it was great. I thought it was... Frank Quitely's art is always a little funny to me, but it's just something I've just come to accept, you know, from Frank Quitely. It just is what it is. I do think there are layers to this book that are going to be interesting. I like the corollary between her and Willy Wonka, or as she says, William Wonka, in terms of this sort of competition aspect of it, because as we remember from that, the trial wasn't exactly for what everyone thought it was for. So I'm wondering if there's going to be similar sort of parallels. All those kids weren't in it for the same reason, and all those kids didn't, you know.
Some of those kids weren't in it for the right reason.
Exactly. Some of those kids got what they deserved. No, but
Aaron says, fuck them kids.
Fuck them kids. No, but so I'm sure there's going to be that part of it. But and then also at the last minute, you did mention that there's a wild card thrown into the mix, you know, in the final couple pages that sort of shifts things. And my first thought was, does this wild card make what she's done more or less valuable? I don't know. I'm not quite sure. So we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting little race to the finish line, I guess.
I have a response to that, but I can't say anything because it's going to spoil it.
Spoiler?
I don't want to do that. Yeah.
No, I know. Way off track. There's an old movie called The 27th Day from the late 50s. Space alien comes down and brings a whole bunch of people from every country together and hands out these little, sort of like makeup compacts. Inside them are capsules that hold the power of life and death.
Oh.
Are they worthy of holding it? And if they can manage to not destroy the world in 27 days, they will let us live and give us the means to be prosperous and peaceful and everything else.
Oh, wow. I bet it doesn't go well.
Well, a day or so later, the alien tells the whole world who these people are. And the government start chasing after them because they all crave power and the rest. And Mark Millar is, I think, my age, give or take. Maybe he's slightly younger, but I it's a great old-fashioned science fiction concept that he's going for. Mm-hmm. And Steve, the way you're describing this book, I want to read it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's totally worth checking out. It's got something. It's got something going on that I'm kind of dying for the next issue. And I, oh my God, Aaron, we'll have to talk off air because I have an idea.
I will say, spoil it to me. I haven't started yet.
Frank Quitely has a very patented way of drawing guts. Splattered guts.
Yeah. There is a skill set. There is a display of power toward the end of the book that is gruesome. Just absolutely gruesome. Like, Not even. I mean,
people shitting their pants and having their skulls crushed all at once.
Yep. Things turning inside out. It's it is gnarly, but it's also, you know, almost like government experiment gone wrong kind of thing. It's very good. It's very good. And I have to admit, I think one of the reasons I've had a hard time, why I didn't want to talk about it last week, keeping the events of the Ambassadors and then Indigo Children.
Yeah, very similar.
Which is the other book that I read and want to talk about. They're not exactly the same, but
they're not the same. No.
They give off similar vibes for me. So I'm having to constantly remind myself. I was like, wait a minute, was that gross? That gross thing was at the end, because that's quietly art. That's, you don't get like that with the other artists.
Bubble guts.
Oh God. Bubble so guts. Gross.
Puffy guts.
Yeah.
Puffy guts.
I think it's a great first issue. Anybody that's curious about it, jump onto it.
I would say check it out. Yeah. It went quickly.
Yeah.
Which is a good sign that it's, you know, you're engaged and your attention is captured. Yeah, Mark Millar, man, he knows how to ratchet up the tension and the anticipation. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Chun-Hee Chung is, so far, an incredible character. Like, you want to talk about displays of power, that whole setup for how she becomes who she is in that book is pretty wild. I'm not quite sure how all of it worked. I don't know if we'll get the answers, but that's fine. I don't necessarily need them, but there's a reason why she's the smartest person and why she's been able to figure this out. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I suppose I'm stoked.
Ooh.
Second book, Indigo Children, number one, story by Kurt Piers and Rockwell Wright, White. Script by Kurt Piers, line art by Alex Dioto, and colors by D. Conif, and letters by Hassan Atmani El Hadu. Sorry. My God. Reading too fast. Alexi, let's talk about him. He's a young kid. He's smarter than smart. He's beyond genius. People that meet him get this strange vibe from him. He is far beyond his years and far beyond what feels like humans overall. Something is definitely up with him. And there's a videotape of an interview with young Alexi, his mom, and a math tutor who is aware of his gifts. And it basically falls into the hands of a journalist named Donovan Price. Okay. Donovan watches this video, them talking about Alexi, and he becomes obsessed with the footage and goes poking around for more information. Probably not the best idea, but he's a journalist and he wants to know what's up.
Never ends well.
So before long, he's pulled into a conspiracy about a town that isn't a town, where every resident is a special ops agent in disguise. And
I'm downloading it as we speak.
And everything is recorded on camera. Who are the Indigo Children? What do they want from humanity? And what if the secret about their existence got out? So that's my little blurb. You can have it. You can put it on the back of the trade. There's something about this book that makes it feel like these events could be happening somewhere, anywhere. Like, we've had Kurt on the show in the past, and he's a very, he came off to me as a very interesting dude, you know, and this is going into places that really had me kind of spiraling with the news cycles that we do. Like, I work in news every day, and so my face is glued to news feeds for at least a couple hours a day. And even in like the 12 years that I've been with Joe Blow and I've had to do this job, I have watched news kind of morph and change and become so much more unreliable as the years have gone by. And this book basically poses a question of, what if there were people that were so advanced? What if there were maybe people that weren't from around here, but were living here with us quietly, but they're about to not be so quiet anymore? What if, like, they thought they were the only one, and then they found out that there was more, and they started to meet up, and they started to talk, and they started to make a plan? And it just got my brain spinning. I was talking to Bronwyn earlier this evening, and she was like correcting some of my language. She's like, "You do not want to say that on the podcast."
Sure, you should, do. Go for it. Should, go you for it.
Word it this way. Oh no, because she was like, I was talking about, and this is very tragic and this is very sad, but like the way that this, like the news cycle, the way that it works mm-hmm. these days, of how tragic it is that just last week we were talking about the latest school shooting. Yeah. Right.
And it was the latest school shooting.
Right. That's but like so it was all anyone could talk about for about 2 days. That was all the time that it had to breathe within like the public consciousness. And then they dropped the Trump indictment, the new date for him mm-hmm. being, you know, called in or whatever. And immediately it buried the other story. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the pattern of tragedy only lives for so long, the outrage is only so visible for mm-hmm. so long, it's no wonder we're stuck in a pattern because it goes away too quickly. Yeah. And we're already on to the next thing.
Brilliant, Steve. Brilliant.
You know, and
reach, brother.
I'm just saying, like, it's wild the way that that works and that we've gotten so used to it. It is just the way that it is. Like, tomorrow being Tuesday, some really big historical shit is supposed to be going down, you know? And it's, I wonder how long that's going to be in the conversation before something else takes its place. And they manufacture it like this and they organize it like this. And this is the part where Bronwyn was like, be careful, be careful.
Fake news.
They're coming for us.
I'm just saying.
I've got my tin hat on as we speak.
Steve slowly lowers the tin hat and reveals he's in a bunker.
I may be drinking the Indigo Children Kool-Aid.
You are.
But I think about this stuff a lot because I mean, I'm not some kind of like in-depth journalist. I'm not putting my ass on the line. I'm writing about movies from my friggin' basement. And, you know, like, that is who I am. But I've been in it for a while, and you pick up on things when you live in that environment for long enough. You kind of watch the way things move, and it's just fascinating. My God, I have all these notes. Where do I even? What do I have here? What are they trying to hide, man? Does anyone remember the brief window last year where the news was basically like, "Yeah, extraterrestrial life forms exist," and no one batted an eye? Because nothing phases us anymore. There was a time last year where there was like multiple reports of UFOs. And
the Navy footage, right. Yeah.
But like respected outlets both that are considered to be major sources for factual news were like, oh yeah, you know, UFOs, whatever.
Right, and those just came back with the whole balloon thing because right after the balloon from China that we shot down.
Right.
We shot down 4 unidentified flying objects.
Yes, I'm telling
you. Turned into flying saucers. No, it was things we didn't see before because we tweaked what we were looking at radar-wise. And now, okay, those have to go too. But no, right away it goes to, look, when I was somewhat younger, 15 or 20 years ago, the History Channel had shows about history. Now they are ancient aliens who built everything we ever knew. They built the Roman Colosseum and all the pyramids and all of South America. It's like, guys, take a step back and take your tin hat off and kind of look at the world. It's like, what are we hiding? Well, kind of nothing, but you know, it makes the world a more mysterious place if there are all conspiracies about everything all the time. And if there are Loch Ness monsters and Bigfoots and all the rest of it, it's wonderful to think that way. And I know I've said this before on the show, but it'd be great if all that stuff were real all the time. But read more than one newspaper, go to more than one website, go to more than one news channel, triangulate where your information comes from.
And know that you're still going to be lied to some of the time.
Right. But then if you can balance it, when I was a kid on Sunday morning, and here in New York, we at one point, I think, had 16 daily newspapers. But even as a kid, we still had 5 or 6. And my dad, his father died when he was 12 years old, and he quit school and went to work and educated himself. On Sunday mornings, we had 5 newspapers on the kitchen table from all the various angles. And you know, you kind of learn that, well, not everyone's right all the time, and make your own mind up, but gather your own facts. We don't gather facts anymore. We let people tell us what the facts are, and they're not right most of the time. From either side, it's all a bias, is a slant.
Well, that being said, because this is something I actually teach my students, like one of our first lectures in my Segment 1 class is always about critical thinking and like media literacy, because I think that the idea of like gather your own information is a good concept, but it isn't working well right now, because a lot of people who believe in like anti-vax and stuff like that were quote unquote gathering their own information, but they were going online and you know what I mean? Like there's a degree of, you do have to trust experts too sometimes, but recognize that people have agendas and try to figure out what is the best choice. It's not like it's simple. I mean, you could get 5 newspapers and try to triangulate it now, and you still might not get near the truth, unfortunately. No.
Are you trying to say something about me reading the Weekly World News?
No, I think that's the right one, actually.
That boy lives.
Speaking of Weekly World News, the Indigo Children thing, you know that's like an existing conspiracy that in the world, right?
I did not. Tell us.
Oh,
tell
yes. The idea that there's actually a whole like parapsychology, which is, you know, like paranormal psychology or whatever field. Indigo children are supposed to be like psychic children, basically born psychic. And I was trying to look for the comic, and that was why I was thinking of this, because as I was looking for the comic, I got like 5 articles that were like 15 signs that you are an indigo child. So if anyone wants to take that quiz with me,
I'll do it.
Yeah,
let's find out if we're indigo children.
Let's do it. We'll report back next week. That's
We'll let you all know if we're born psychic. So, you know, that's what's
Wouldn't
going
you
on.
Be able to tell that already?
You would think, but apparently you need to take a BuzzFeed article. You would think. But apparently you need a BuzzFeed quiz to find out. So
wouldn't it create an infinite loop of psychic predictions? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Always
love it.
I just found Bat Child found in cave, but it's Matt Gaetz as Bat Boy.
He's not good enough to be Bat Boy.
No, he sucks.
True. He does.
All right, Indigo Children.
Indigo Children. They're
those
real.
Those are the things that
that's
made
the talking comic
stance. You want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole with me. Kurt Pierce is good. You know what? I'll say this. My takeaway from Indigo Children, not only, I really didn't even get into the specifics of the book. It's very good. It's Kurt Pierce's stuff. I immediately wanted to read something else of his. The moment that I put it down, I was like, what else do I have that's Kurt Pierce? And I know there's Youth. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there from over the years, but there's something out right now called like Teenage Wasteland, like This Is Teenage Wasteland or something like that.
Nice. Love the Who reference. Come on.
Yeah, that I might have to go and check out for next time. We'll see. But man, I love comics that when I read them, I just go off. You know, like you go into a place in your head and you start kind of spiraling out of control, and it just creates this whirlwind of thoughts, and in this case, you know, conspiracies.
Yes, and now Steve believes he's an indigo child. It's a whole thing.
What was the book? Was it Letter 44?
Yes.
That was all those years ago, which was the letter passed president to president about the UFOs and Roswell and all the rest of it.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. And then paved the way for Saucer Country after that.
Yes, Paul Cornell. Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
It's all giving me Welcome to Night Vale vibes too. So, ugh, love Welcome to Night Vale.
Has anyone ever seen the television show from, I guess it's the late 90s, early 2000s, Dark Skies?
Yes.
Right?
It's been ages, but yes. Theories. Oh, I it's, know.
Roswell happened, and aliens have then infiltrated and permeated the history of everything that goes on, and it touch tones through the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, Dorothy Kilgallen, Kennedy assassination.
It's love
all
it.
The early
full Illuminati.
Yeah, completely and utterly Majestic 12 and whatever, and it's cool stuff. But yeah,
classic. Check that one out.
Yeah,
reminds me of V from the.
Oh, 90s. I love V.
Yeah, V.
V oh my 90s. God, V yeah, is so good. Event. Early I try Robert to reference England. That all the time, and people my age don't know it, and that's sad to me.
That was an event.
Come on, they eat lizards and stuff. It's great.
I know. Did you watch the new V? It was really weird. Was they made remade no, it.
Yeah.
Didn't catch
yeah.
up with the new one.
I watched some of it, and there was that, and it was the 4400 was a thing in the early 90s, similar thing. So here's the thing. The Ambassadors and Indigo Children, although both dipping their toe in the I don't know, metahuman sort of arena, if you want to call it that, come at it from entirely different perspectives. One, the Ambassadors is a world that wants the world to know of these things. They've all been on this hunt to be the first to sort of create these sort of extra human things. Whereas Indigo Children, as we see by the experience of our little intrepid reporter there being strung up, that no one wants this to get out. You know, everyone that they talk to is just like, I'm going to need you to leave and, you know, forget you ever heard about this. So it's creating tension in very different ways. Mark Millar is leaning into it. Mr. Pierce is sort of, it's like, nope, this is all very X-Files-y. We don't want anyone to know about this, and anyone who comes close is going to get snuffed.
Mm.
And there was an attempted snuff.
Oh, you mean Kurt Pierce?
It's really
not Millar. Yeah,
no,
it's Millar really tough when you have a
right
an unsuccessful Steve, snuff.
It's that's, hard.
Yeah, no. I was saying, Steve, Millar has one approach, and then Pierce has another. I was comparing them. One wants it. He goes outward and big, which is Millar. He wants everyone to know. He wants this to be a world,
yeah.
A world changing thing. He likes to create whole, if you look at the magic order, he likes to create entire worlds that just
world. Yeah,
bend,
yeah.
Yeah, just to bend yeah. to whatever he says is the status quo. Whereas Pierce is just like, nope, it's this world, but just a little thing hidden here that you that we're going to make sure stays hidden because we're taking that sort of mystery and, you know, that sort of approach to it. So just coming at it. Both sort of extraterrestrial in nature, but a little bit different.
He's pretty good, Mark Millar. Yeah. He's all right.
Have you heard of this guy?
I know, right?
Mark like Millar, this real this new, tiny writer.
This new figure I just found.
He's going somewhere in life.
You know,
Stan Lee. I've heard of him, right?
Yeah,
he's heard of some books.
Keep I just away.
Anything that he's put out for the past little while. There was even something I think it was called like Nemesis or something. That it's came out now. A few weeks ago or a few months ago. I'm even interested in checking that out just because everything that I've read from him lately has been firing for me. What's that?
You know who's drawing that, don't you?
I don't.
Mr. Jorge Jimenez.
Oh! Ooh. Did it just get hotter in here? What?
Speaking of slut era.
Right over here.
Woo!
Amazing. All right. Speaking of bringing the heat, it's time for another lightning round.
Oh, yes. Big lightning.
You know, Steve brought us the we want to believe energy, and I want to talk about something else we want to believe in. That's right. Gay love.
Hey.
I had to try to match your segue game there.
It's not good tonight.
You were doing so great.
I was, and now I'm trying too hard.
I know it's we complimented you and now you're conscious of it.
I know you built me up
to watch
me fall.
Me up
that's right.
Cup and here where
look,
we went. Yeah.
You are still the Paul Blart Mall Cop of my heart, even if you can't segue.
Aww, that should be a t-shirt.
I just made a Valentine of it. If you go to the chat,
yes, I did see it.
Oh my god!
But yeah, so last week I said I was going to try to keep bringing a theme, so I'm doing that once again, and this time we are doing sapphic love comics or women loving women. And I have some really good ones. If you want to just completely melt, read any of these, to be totally honest. So starting off, and also I should say, Bob read all of them, which I'm very excited to hear his thoughts on all of them.
Thank you for the shout.
It made me really happy. I love when you read my comics, Bob. But yes, so much. Yeah, thank you.
You bring
so
such great stuff to the table. How can I not try? At least to... You know, go for it.
All right, all right,
all right. Talk to us.
All right, Steve, get out of here.
Make me feel guilty for not reading anything this week.
We're busy, yeah. Steve.
I was going to say, people who actually care about me read my... No, I'm kidding, Steve.
Oh, man.
Get off your soapbox and just let them talk. Take your conspiracies out of here.
Yeah, pack up your conspiracies in your little black box and let us have our love fest over here. But yeah, so the first one I read was Office Talk. This is a long time read. So if you've listened to Thirsty Untuned, this has been in our award show multiple times because it's just such a classic, like, rom-com vibe. The entire plot line is two women work in the same office, both mutually have a crush on each other and cannot get to the first date stage.
Please. It's hard to deal with.
It's hard. No, you're not wrong. It's a challenge. There's a lot of pining. There's a lot of making excuses to go to each other's desk. There's a lot of other people in the office, and it gradually grows how many, just trying to meddle to get them all together. It's extremely cute. The art is amazing. It's just a sweet, like, warm hug of a comic with, like, no stakes whatsoever, except for the highest stakes of all, which is, will she say yes?
I mean, in the pitch of it, sort of, yes. They're talking about, oh, will she just fall into this horrible thing as if it's bad to just fall in love, kind of, right?
Yes, and yes.
I'm saying that Selma might actually charm Lynn
if she
flops into a pile of mush.
I think so.
She just really goes for it. And she might actually work. And should we trust our emotions would be my comment.
I was obsessed with, like, they get so little distance each time. It's hysterical. Mm-hmm. They go out for the first time, but neither one of them know if it's a date. And at one point, she's I discovered that she doesn't have a boyfriend. A success as she's walking away. And she's like, oh shit, I didn't discover if she liked women though. It's delightful.
It's a very slow burn, but very delightful at the same time.
Yes.
It's the give and take of real human relations. Yes. Yes.
I think it's an interesting slow burn in which you're, like, perfectly aware it's a slow burn mutually, but neither one of them realize it.
Right. So, Lynn walks out of the office, comes around the head. Oh, are you going home now? Kind of thing.
Yeah. And, yeah. I know, it's so good. I love them to pieces. I love all the, like, random back, extra characters that come in and are having their own little things going on. It's
they're
so
talking
charming.
To her. I can't talk because now so-and-so's over there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know. Whenever she sees Lynn talking to anyone, she's just like, I can't approach. And then of course someone will inevitably see her peering around corners. It's amazing. They kill me.
I hope Selma and Lynn, I don't want to spoil the end of a book, but Selma does okay at the end of this.
Mm-hmm. I guess you'll have to keep reading, Bob.
Oh, okay.
Let's just say it doesn't seem to be setting up a tragedy, so I think we're going to be okay.
That's okay. The next one might be a tragedy if you're going where I think you are.
Oh, I love this. Let's double team this whole lightning round. I like it. We're doing good. Yeah, so the next one I am obsessed with. This is Nevermore. It is a Edgar Allan Poe inspired gothic horror adventure romance. And it's delightful.
Those are a lot of words.
They all apply here, right? This
all
is awesome.
True. So there, two women wake up without their memories in this strange place covered with monsters. All that they know is they have a suitcase. Each one of them has a suitcase chained. Yep. Yes, handcuffed to their arms. When one of them says Lenore, the other says Annabelle Lee.
Annabelle Lee, come on, please.
Yeah, I know, right? There are ravens flying everywhere. It's like, yep, it's Edgar Allan Poe paradise. And the two of them are trying to figure out what's going on while like trying to survive these monsters, and then discover that they are somehow supposed to be starting class at this mysterious, creepy, gothic academy. But they, again, don't remember who they are, what's going on. And as they get there, the people who run the academy, who are these creepy like twins, inform them, haven't you figured it out? Obviously, you're dead. Yeah. It's so interesting. The art is incredible, like in absolutely stunning. Yes. I'll drop some in the chat. What do you think about this one, Bob? I'm dropping some art for the others.
Look, if you're going to do Poe and go right away for the Lost Lenore and Annabelle Lee, I'm in.
Oh, I know, right?
We add an incredible art style and the fashion of the style. Besides,
yes,
we have, it's goth anime. Don't know if there is such a cross
hatch, yes,
but it's beautifully done, emotionally deep. And these people I want to see more of, and we've got orbs and stuff going on.
Yes.
Has anyone watched the original Prisoner or even the remake where you got the big globe flotting down the breeze? It's like, oh, wait a minute, what? No.
Yes. I love it.
So many levels of this. I loved it. And it was, the first few chapters are very long.
Which this is a meaty read.
You keep being grabbed in as bingo, big moment, small moment. We're together and they're talking and then something else happens. I'm trying not to spoil.
Yeah, I know.
I'm trying to spoil myself either because I'm only a few episodes in.
Fair. This and it's one of those with like music playing and there's stuff moving on the screen. So it's like a full like sensory experience to read it. It's
one of the favorite things I've ever seen on webtoons.
Yes, me too.
Loved this.
I agree. And Steve, you're always complaining about me adding to your TBR. This is a Steve book. So.
Oh, yes, it is, Steve.
You've got to read this one. This is extremely up your alley.
I know it is. I've been looking at it on images for the past couple of minutes.
I just posted a bunch of my favorite panels over on our chat for you to look at.
It reminds me of something, and I cannot put my finger on it, and it's killing me. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
I just can't get there.
It's really, I love their character dynamic too, even though neither one of them remembers who they are. So there's not like backstory yet for either one of them.
They're right away in peril. Yeah. So they bond pretty quickly, right?
Right?
As you would.
Trauma bonding fast. And their personalities just burst off because we have, you know, Lenore is trying to figure everything out and she handles everything with like sarcasm and a dark sense of humor. Whereas Annabelle Lee is like, I think I'm probably dreaming. So what? Let's walk right into the arms of the monster. Who cares?
No.
And she's like, no. And so Lenore is constantly having to save her because she's like, nope, we're not dreaming. It's delightful. And did you make it far enough to meet the weirdo twins? You did,
no,
right?
No, I haven't. I haven't met the
Okay, I won't say anymore. Just that they are just the deepest, weirdest people ever, and I love them to pieces. It's great. It's so good. And speaking of things that are so good, but very different vibe-wise.
Very different.
Let's dramatically about face and talk about Aerial Magic.
Oh, so cute.
Aerial Magic is a cotton candy fluff of a story. It starts out when the like main character, Wisteria, is a little witch child and her dad gives her first broom. And it's just full of like joy.
Can I fly?
Can I go flying, daddy? You know, it's so cute. And then we find out like a plot of Aerial Magic is that most witches, you know, they use spell books and incantations, but she is a witch that's been born with a disability and she cannot read. So she's been bullied and tormented and talked down to, but she's finally found an internship with somebody who wants to actually try to help her figure out how to make magic accessible for herself at a broom fixing shop.
A great metaphor for real life and teachers and all. Yeah, right. Please.
I know. Yeah. And the person that's teaching her just happens to be only about a year older than her and a very, very pretty girl.
Just so happens.
Just so happens. We, you know, we also meet the other intern that works there, who's like a sarcastic shit, and I loved him at once. And it's clearly this very charming, like, slice of life magic story with that kind of purple and pink palettes. Yes, say more. Say more, Bob. Go for it.
No, in a book like this, at a certain level, you don't want to go full magical girl, kind of.
Yes.
But it has those elements and some of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
But the underlying emotion of someone discovering themselves, I'm always in for that, because we all had to be there. We all had to do who we are, why we relate to the world around us. Love this too.
I'm really loving that more and more fantasy books are incorporating disabilities into them too. And then how does that work? So I've been watching Shadow and Bones, and no spoilers, I don't think Steve started it yet, but there is a new character in it who has a learning disability. And it is very interesting how it incorporates that into the plot. And so I've been loving that. And then finding this, I'm really excited just to see how this goes and, you know, what's going on. And she has a familiar that's a little like bird that reads for her, except he's so distracted. He never is really any help. He just like,
are we saying that's a pigeon? I'm a New Yorker, so I think that's a sassy pigeon.
I think it's a sassy pigeon named Puppy. Yeah. Which is very cute, who goes off to immediately goes off to fight the city ravens because they looked at him wrong. I love it.
Well, again, that's a New York City pigeon, right? They'd fight everybody.
He's like squaring up with those ravens. the absolute shit that is the other intern is like, didn't you have a familiar to read for you? And she's like, yeah, he's currently in a street fight with a raven. So I'm here alone. And speaking of witchy vibes,
here we go.
I also read Muted. So I want to be really clear here. There are two different webcomics. If you read the witch one, Bob, you're on the right one. Okay. So,
New Orleans Witches, that one.
New Orleans Witches, you got
That's the one I read. So
there is Muted and there's hashtag Muted, and both of them are great, but there couldn't be more different. So we're talking about just Muted. That's to clarify. But Muted is incredibly gorgeous, incredibly good story about a woman in this witch family. And it's like the kind of like Ready or Not rich family where there's clearly a lot of secrets and murder going on.
I hadn't thought of that. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And she knows that she is different. Like that's the thing she knows right away. Her magic doesn't work right. As far as I can tell, she's got poison ivy magic, but we'll see as it develops. That seems to be what's going on. She has some natural control of plants, but that isn't what her family does. And so she tries to hide this from them. And in the process of hiding this, looks like she's just kind of a fuck up. Like they think that she can't do it, but in reality, she can just do something very different than them. She has a tragic backstory. There's something horrible that happened because apparently all the witch families are at war with each other, and something happened to her mother, and she was the only survivor. So there's all this like stuff going on with her, but she is having these kind of weird visions that there's some warning that she's getting, and that's kind of where we start out. I'm not going to say more about the plot because there's a lot of twists and turns, mm-hmm. but it's, if you liked like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, this is the way to go. Perfect. For you. Right? Yeah. Absolutely.
They're walking through New Orleans, right? And all of a sudden, yes. visions are coming to her.
Yes.
And it's, oh boy, okay, we're in a spooky place and spooky things are happening. And it's back to her mom.
Yes.
Come on. You do magic tragic or tragic magic in that kind of sense.
I like it.
I'm always in for that because magic has a price, as we've learned through all these books and movies and comics we've read.
Yeah.
And we want to see where that goes. And the style is incredible. The art is amazing. So detailed.
Talking about the color palette thing, I love when a comic has a very specific color palette. And this one is those like bright magentas, deep purples. Mm-hmm. And it's so stunning. I love it to pieces. And then my final about face to something just adorable. I started reading this one today, and
I wrote the same word down, adorable. Yes, okay. So
I legitimately couldn't stop reading it, because even though nothing happens in this comic.
No, you're right.
I couldn't stop because I love them so much. Amongst Us is a love story about two misanthropic women who love each other and nothing else, basically.
Which works sometimes.
It does. It's very charming. They fight like an old married couple constantly.
Yes.
And occasionally their one other friend that they have, which is this like... It's amazing because both of them are like gothy and like angry, but their one friend is like a bubblegum sweetheart that they protect. And she's always like, do you two hate each other or love each other? Like, what's the vibe here? And they're like, we love each other, but she's an idiot. But, and she
They both love and hate each other.
And they're so cute. So the two of them are classical musicians. One is was the conductor of the school.
The cellist, right?
Yes. And the other is a cellist, and they meet that way in high school. And that now the story is 5 years later, you know, they're adults and they're out on their own and kind of just figuring out life and playing music and loving each other and thinking each other are literally the best musicians in the world, but also thinking each other the stupidest humans in the world. Which are both true, it seems, from the comic. Yes. So we have like Blackbird, who is a Loki variant, I'm convinced. She is just like chaotic.
Could definitely be.
Kind of angry, but in a like
not
very
chaotic neutral
way.
Either. Chaotic.
No.
Chaotic.
Yeah. She's chaotic. Somehow, if there's a chaotic, she's yes.
Chaotic plus
you're so
or
right.
Squared or whatever, yeah.
She really is. And then we have Valise, I think might be how you say it. And she is very quiet, and she gives me kind of April Ludgate vibes. If people have seen Parks and Rec, where she's just kind of, I hate everything kind of thing. But, you know, again, I hate everything but her kind of vibes. Yeah. And the two of them together are just magic. It's just there's literally like a whole issue, which is just them trying to manage a busy subway. And I was riveted.
Well, I think I may be wrong, but isn't the description slice of life?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those.
Yes.
But you add the mystical elements to it, the other things to this, and it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to overuse this word. It is charming.
It is charming.
That means you read it and you just want to read more. And that's what, in a comic book in a print form, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're putting these out once a week in what would amount to 20 or so panels or pages, you better capture my heart. And they're doing this over and over and over again.
I know. I was really hard for me to stop reading in order to get on and record the episode. Yeah, that's where I was with this one. And like I said, there is no plot, but it is absolutely perfect. It's hard to explain. Yeah.
We've talked a lot about the real world is very challenging, right? Mm-hmm. And if I can, and maybe 50 or 60 years ago, it was in television characters. You could mm-hmm. wander in and always count on Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock and Lieutenant Uhura and Sulu, mm-hmm. and you could be that. Or it was Columbo or somebody that you knew every week. I can spend an hour with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And feel better about the world around me. Well, comic strips used to be like that. Mm-hmm. They've kind of moved away from that. Mm-hmm. There aren't many still doing what they used to do. Peanuts is gone and Calvin Hobbes, so on and so forth. There's still Blondie, I guess. But, you know, that sort of Doonesbury.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of I can stop in every Tuesday, every Wednesday, every Saturday and spend time with people I relate to, who are like me, who reflect my values, and they're there for me to, I had a really awful day today.
Yeah.
And I could pop over to Webtoons and here are the people I love. I wish real life was like these people, kind of.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. And look, I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of Webtoons that are awful. Let's see. I mean, there's a percentage of, right? I'm sure there's garbage there too. Like it's Sturgeon's Law. 90% of everything is crap.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've been getting from Chris, from you, from Bronwyn, from Steve, are these wonderful, wonderful books in fabulous styles, mm-hmm. in genres all over the map. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. And it took, I'm an old guy who reads floppies. I read them. They were 10 cents a piece.
Yeah.
And here over on Webtoons is a whole world of other stuff that needs to be explored. And I don't have enough time to explore all of them, but boy, I'm finding loads of stuff to love.
And thank I'm so you glad. Oh, that makes me really happy. And you make a really good point because, you know, we talk a lot on Thursday Untuned about how Webtoons is an accessible medium. And, you know, on the one hand, it's accessible to readers because it's free. But on the other hand, it's accessible to creators, too, because it is hard to get like a slice of life comic published. Like that is not something we see a lot of. But over on Webtoons, it's an entire category. You can go to the slice of life section and you can just, like you're saying, tune in with your friends once a week and read what they're up to. It's a place where those kind of stories can still flourish. And the fact that these are the slice of life from the past, but updated to be more diverse in the present. Like I said, every comic I brought this week was a sapphic comic. You can't find that much representation on the stands, even though we're improving. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It makes me very happy, and I'm glad you enjoyed them.
Oh, look! Thank you so much, Chris, for always bringing these to the table. And again, Bronwyn, when she's here, Steve also, and for those listeners out there who have been intrigued by the slice of life comics we brought to the table, the things like Backstagers or Giant Days, mm-hmm. Webtoons is a thing you may want to start to check out
when the books
on the stands are not giving you what you need. Well, over on Webtoons, there are thousands of episodes of things you might find yourself intrigued with, captivated by, hooked by, I'm sorry, entirely indoctrinated by that. I need to read more of this every... You're culting us, Chris. Culting us.
You've caught on.
Yes. Is that it? Okay.
Oh, it's too late for you. You drank the Kool-Aid long ago, Bob.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you liked Giant Days, I think Amongst Us especially will be right up your alley. And if you liked Backstagers, I would say Aerial Magic would be right up your alley. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, any other comments? Or I will give us a segue because I have one to my new
segue away. Nobody's going to follow that love fest. Jesus.
Okay. That was great. Well, going off of queer stories, let's go to gay news. As your queer respondent here on the show, I would like to... I haven't called myself that in ages now, but that's what I am. I still
Good
am.
For you. Go for it.
We had the GLAAD Awards this week, and oh my God, comics were represented, and a lot of like shows we all have talked about were represented. So it was amazing. You should absolutely go on Instagram and check out everyone's beautiful outfits and some of the speeches. It was a really good time. Jadzia Axelrod, my girl, was obviously there representing and nominated and looking fantastic, girl.
Nice.
She looked amazing. And we had comics that were winning. So speaking of sapphic love stories, Poison Ivy won for best comic. I was so delighted. I was out here screaming seeing that. So Poison Ivy won for, let me give my exact category. I had it up for a second and then I scrolled away from it. It was Outstanding Comic Book. So it was Poison Ivy by G. Willow Wilson and Markio Takara. We love it. We love it here. And it deserved to win. And it did. Outstanding graphic novel anthology was Young Men in Love, which is has a bunch of different writers in it, and definitely worth checking out. It was really good as well. Other things we've mentioned on the show, Lasa Spooky won for Outstanding Spanish Language Television Show. Nice. Yay! I know. I love when my show, my favorite show ever, gets some attention. What We Do in the Shadows won for Outstanding Comedy. And
Bros.
I was going to say Bros won for Movie, which is one of Steve and Bronwyn's favorites.
One of the funniest movies I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good. Absolutely. There's some other ones on here that I haven't checked out yet, but I won two things like White Lotus that everyone's telling me I should watch. So maybe I will do that soon. Just some really good things going on. Overall.
Have you checked out A League of Their Own?
Not yet. Yes, A League of Their Own also won. What did they win for? Outstanding TV show. I haven't yet, but I've been told I should. Everyone says it's amazing.
I love the original movie so much. I would be
just
curious
watch
to
it
see.
For the start of baseball season, so you got to watch that. And so the show is on what? Where are we on the show? Is that a Netflix or an Amazon?
I think it's on Amazon.
I think it's an Amazon thing.
I think it's Amazon. It doesn't say on here, but I think it is. And it has Darcy Carden from The Good Place. I love her so much. Oh, she's one of the main characters. Also, I'm noticing that I have to just say this because 911 Lone Star apparently won, and I'm learning in this moment that's a gay show. I don't know. It's a Texas police show, right?
It's literally
in the name.
It's police and firefighters and EMT. Like, it's all first responders. I genuinely, like, I need to know. Somebody out there, tell us why 911 Lone Star is a gay show.
Rob Lowe.
Is it because of Rob Lowe?
It's a spinoff of the one with Angela Bassett.
Well, see, I tried to watch the regular 911. It is made by Ryan Murphy, but that does not inherently make it gay, I don't think. Right.
Why is 911 Lone Star so gray? I was looking for gray.
Gay. Tell
Rob
us why
Lowe
gay.
Is in it. He's gray, yes.
I guess so. I don't know what's going on, but I tried to watch the regular 911, and it was queer baiting the hell out of everyone, so I'm confused by this. Go
Meet
ahead.
Meet the LGBTQ leading men of 911 Lone Star.
Well, I watched wrong one.
Hold on, from left.
Are they gay firefighters? What's going on here?
Brian Michael Smith, Ronan Rubenstein, and Rafael Silva.
Wait, there's three of them?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So maybe they got it for queer rep.
Okay, apparently I watched the wrong 911. I should have been watching the spinoff. Because if you are on Twitter, you know that everybody is mad about all the queer baiting in the regular show. Apparently the spinoff is the answer to that, I guess. So, apparently I'm going to be watching 911 Lone Star.
There you go.
Anything else we want to shout out here, Steve? Anything you see?
No, I'm looking at the list. I think we've covered just about everything that I'm familiar with.
Right. I wanna watch some of it, like whatever this children's program Adoptosaurus Rex is. I want to watch that.
Love to watch The White Lotus. So yeah. I haven't really approached Bronwyn about it, but if you start watching it and it's good stuff.
Oh yeah. TJ loves it. It's got the TJ seal of approval, so I've been meaning to.
Yeah.
Meaning to watch it. I noticed the Drag Story Hour got a special recognition at the awards, which I want to shout out because obviously those are being protested right now. So I'm really glad that GLAAD was doing something for them. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Huzzah.
It was very gay up in Comics Land for a little while. It made me happy. Gay news.
All right, speaking of news, let's stick with the news.
Oh, you're the segue king again.
Look at him go.
Just say the word news again. I'm winning right now.
News.
I'll start off with the smallest thing and probably the thing that's only for me. Street Fighter is legendary. The studio that does the John Wick stuff.
And the
Godzilla stuff, and so on and so forth. They are picking up the TV and film rights to Street Fighter. We won't talk about the Van Damme Street Fighter.
Yes, we will. I love the Van Damme Street Fighter. Are you kidding me?
Sequel.
It's delightful.
I don't know if I'd use that word, but okay.
You're on an island by yourself.
Yeah,
somebody's going to agree with me.
I'll hang out on the island for a little while.
Thank you.
Not surprised at all.
Look.
This is part of what I've been saying all along. This is part of the big push where comic books became the hot new Hollywood thing and every comic book property under the sun's being bought up or at least optioned to become a thing. Maybe, maybe not. Video games, with the proof being The Last of Us on HBO and how much attention and how much money that has garnered, The Super Mario Brothers movie comes out this week, which, by the way, next week we will have a review of that show. Maybe only from me, but I am going Wednesday night.
I was going to say, by who?
I am so excited to see this movie. I'm
so happy for you.
Out. I can't wait to see it. It looks so good.
No, to be fair, it looks good. It's just the Chris Pratt. We know I'm allergic to
Chris
Pratt.
Have you heard the news?
He's appearing in the Pong movie as well.
God damn it. Okay, well, Pong's out for me too. I already can't see Guardians 3. He's got to stop being a movie so I can watch movies.
Anyway, Street Fighter 6 is coming out in June.
Yay.
Street Fighter's getting a TV series. It's getting
a film. If it's
the
John Wick people, though, like, it's going to actually be good.
It might be good. Okay. I'm going to say it might be good because I was sold a very different bill of rights over at the Mortal Kombat trip. Oh. And then that movie came out and it was not Raid the Redemption, but Mortal Kombat. That is what they told me. That is what they sold me. And then that movie came out and I had fun with it. But it was not the Raid. So, yeah.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm going to keep an eye on this.
I'm excited to see Van Damme again.
Yeah, me too. Van Damme does the splits. Sonic Boom.
Just let him just do the splits. It's all he wants to do.
Resulting in incontinence.
Prostate problems.
Let's move on over to Trailer Town.
Ooh.
We've got two. I'll save the best for last.
Well, no, now you're making a judgment call.
I am a little bit.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And you're going to be right, I think, or I'm judging you hard. So just prepare yourself.
I am super excited for Secret Invasion. I'm only putting it first because we've seen some Secret Invasion footage.
Okay.
So this was just more of a tease. I think Secret Invasion looks great. It looks a little creepy. It looks a little bit more serious. It has kind of the Winter Soldier vibes.
Yeah,
for
we're
me
not going all
bit.
Superhero, bright and shiny and flashy. It's a spy thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an espionage thing. The Skrulls, I'm very hot on between the end of last year and this. We just finished the Secret Invasion series that came out from Ryan North, and it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I think this is the perfect time for this to be dropping in June. I'm really excited to see what they do with Emilia Clarke's character. She has her character has been well. No, she's
we know
been
who she is, but we're
do
not
we know now?
Yes, we don't want to say. Okay. We're not going to say.
I missed it,
Steve.
She plays a pivotal role, and I think it's going to be the way that they've talked about it in interviews. Samuel L. Jackson and Emilia Clarke did an interview with Vanity Fair, mostly Jackson. And he talked a lot about the show, and there was a bunch of like new stills from it. And then they dropped the new trailer. It just looks exciting, and it looks like it's going to have a lot of tension to it. And maybe, like I said, go back to the vibes that you get from something like a Winter Soldier from them, where it's a little bit more boots on the ground, a little bit more serious. The consequences are a bit bigger. There's not as much of the like flyy punchy stuff. I've
that shot of Ben Mendelsohn in that office where all of a sudden everyone transforms around him. That's creepy stuff.
And it's got a lot of like,
that's creepy.
It's got a lot of characters that I feel like we haven't seen enough of in a while that I'm looking forward to getting reacquainted with, like Nick Fury and Maria Hill.
I love Maria
there's a
Hill.
Bunch of new people being introduced. We're getting more of Martin Freeman's character, and it looks awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
Is that the Super Skrull, do you think?
That was the exact question that I asked myself at the end of that trailer. It has to be, right?
I mean, they can shapeshift into a file cabinet, as we've heard from Captain Marvel. But that usage of the powers?
Yeah.
That strikes me as very Super Skrull. And yes, I'd love that to happen.
That was the first thing that I thought of when I saw that final shot. And then I was asking myself, they just got new writers for the Fantastic Four movie. So I'm wondering if they're going to incorporate the Skrulls into that. And if Super Skrull, if Ben Kingsley Adir or Kingsley Ben-Adir is going to show up again, possibly in that movie.
Yeah, which could lead into all our Kang dynasties and Secret Wars and everything else coming forward. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just want that the way I did.
And more importantly, Blue Beetle. I'm sorry. I was so excited.
Blue Beetle also looks awesome.
Yes, it does.
Oh, Blue Beetle looks incredible.
Now, how do you say his name? Is it Zolo Jaime. Or Sholo?
Oh, wait.
not Jaime Reyes. I know Jaime Reyes.
I was wondering, Steve.
No, because it's X-O-L-O. Is it Sholo or Zolo?
Zolo, I think.
Zolo Maraduena?
I'm not sure.
Karate Kid. Cobra Kai Kid.
He looks great in this. It looks great. I love that it's so family centered. That's one of the hearts of Jaime's story always. And it looks like a blast. The suit looks amazing. I am freaking out. Like, this is the calmest I can talk about it.
I'm genuinely very excited for this. One thing that I absolutely love in comics, particularly in superhero stuff, I like it when people know. I get a little bit burnt out on the secret identity thing and trying to keep it a secret from everyone and it not just being general knowledge. And maybe it's not general knowledge in Jaime's case, but his family is obviously in on it. That transformation of when he gets sucked up onto the ceiling and that stuff starts bubbling over him. It was violent. It was it was a lot. But it just looks like it has the right combination, at least the trailer does, of fun family togetherness, maybe a little bit of like family oriented comedy, but it's also very clever and highly, highly stylistic. There's so much color going on in this, and it doesn't look like a DC movie.
Everybody,
you're right, it's not brown and orange. Yes.
Yeah.
We know what's happening. It's like first Shazam, but not like second Shazam.
Like even the tone of him at the very beginning of the trailer, when he's got the glasses on and they're doing that slow pan.
That was so funny.
Over to him. And he's looking like this like rich billionaire badass. And then he's got to scrape gum off of a chair.
It's
totally like they break the mood and he's just like, oh, come on. His family's embarrassing him. It looks.
Yeah, we get out of the limo a little later with his like school blazer on. Sure, same idea.
I loved it. Oh my god, it looks like so much fun. Yeah.
George Lopez and his beard.
George Lopez's beard.
I love
fun is good. I mean, fun should happen in superhero movies.
Yes, I know. It looks amazing. I'm so excited.
I'll say this. I'm looking forward to seeing Shazam when it comes out on video. I will happily watch it. No problem. But
I loved it.
I know you didn't hate it. What I'm saying is where there wasn't enough Shazam 2, the stuff that was coming out about it wasn't giving me enough of a reason to go and see it in the theater. I will see Blue Beetle likely opening weekend when we talk about it on the show. Absolutely, I will see this movie.
So I had to take the bullet for Shazam. Well, Chris and I had to take the bullet for Shazam.
I didn't take a bullet. I had a blast.
I had really great popcorn and soda.
We had a fun conversation about it.
Right. We mostly agreed on the things that were really good about it, and the things that were not were mostly dismissible, but you want it to be better.
Yes, I think that's fair. This looks better. this looks like what better looks like.
Amen.
And I don't know if anyone saw Josh Trujillo's like post about it, but he's wrapping up his graduation day run, and he was talking about like how what an honor it was to write this character like in advance of it coming out and it to be a very similar vibe. And I don't know. I'm just really happy this is happening. I love Jaime so much. And I'm so glad we skipped right to Jaime and didn't have a Cord movie.
Aww.
He is an asshole.
I don't disagree, but he might get mentioned, you know.
Yeah, you're right. He might be involved, but I like that we didn't have, I like that it they decided not to have to do the character before the legacy character. Like, I like that we just go straight to Jaime.
The Blue Beetle goes back so far. Yes, you get into the weeds of that too. But who's the best story to tell today? It's Jaime's. Absolutely.
I agreed 100%.
Do you think Jaime makes the cut into the new DC?
I hope so. I think he's close enough to the new DC timeline now. If it does well, they could decide to. I feel like
I don't know if timeline counts anymore.
Well, I don't know. I don't mean in series time. I mean, literally, like, it's coming out right now. And I think that if it does well enough, and so far nobody involved with the movie has committed any crimes or
no one's had a cult form in Iceland or whatever. Yeah, okay.
Nobody has tweeted anything wild. So, I mean, like, we have a chance with this DC movie. Good Lord, we've had a run. lately over at DC, but I think he could survive the Flashpoint. We'll see.
Man,
I know.
Back when it was George Reeves and Adam West, it was so much simpler for the DC properties.
Back before Twitter, when they could say things out loud, you mean?
Yeah, and the press That's might the cover difference. It up. Just like, oh, you were drunk. Just shut up. We didn't hear that. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody heard anything.
Oh man.
Aaron, where are you on the Blue Beetle? Are you excited? Are you going to see it?
I'm excited for Blue Beetle. You know, it was something different. Well, I say different in the context of what we've seen from DC. I think I was more excited because it was divorced from all of this Dwayne Johnson, Shazam.
Oh, Black good Adam Lord. Cut. Yes.
So I was just sort of like, you know what? Let's just see what happens and go there. I was excited about it.
The real life Batman versus Superman that is Dwayne Johnson, Zachary Levi.
Yeah, it was just divorced from all of that. It was just sort of, let's just look forward. I didn't see that. I haven't seen the trailer for Secret Invasion yet, so I didn't have much to say about it. I didn't get around.
You're acting like you weren't excited, but I think you wrote that you watched it like 5 times in our chat. So
I said 10 times.
Sorry, my bad.
So, yeah, I I had thoughts. I mean, there's so many different Blue Beetles, iterations rather. I'm sorry. I'm thinking back to the one that was, I think it ended like last year, the one with Blue Beetle and in comics rather, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, where that characterization of Blue Beetle was more sort of, I understand what my uncle did or whatever dad or whatever did, but I'm a little bit more self-deprecating and competent, but need confidence. I mean, I think it depends on the context. Like, I would love to see that Blue Beetle if he was partnered with Booster Gold in that sort of buddy cop type of way. Mm-hmm. But just like in the comics universe, the two can exist in the same space.
Yes.
And sort of also have Jaime over there as well. Because, I mean, that was even the case, I think, if I remember correctly, for a period of time. No, actually, I think one's death led to the other in the Young Justice series. And I think one's death led to the other.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Adults don't survive well in the Young Justice series.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's room for everyone, but I'm glad we started here with something that,
I agree.
As always with DC book, DC movies, though, my fear is that we see everything we would potentially get excited about in the trailer.
And the third act will be brown and orange.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Please.
I gotta say, act,
developers come in and move Jaime and his family out of their neighborhood.
It's the horde of hordes.
Watching the trailer on mute on my my other screen right now, and I have to say, this looks awesome.
It looks so good,
and it looks like a really good movie for Mara Duena. Like, I liked him a lot in Cobra Kai, but the writing, like, he kind of suffers. A lot of those kids kind of suffer under the writing of that show. Like, it's a good show, don't get me wrong, but there's some real sap running through that show at times. And he looks like he's very comfortable here, and like he's getting to do a lot more. Like, he's actually acting in this trailer alone. And I don't know, like, there's a lot going on in here. The giant weapon he gets at the end.
Oh, the sword. Oh my God. I love that, like, Final Fantasy sword he's got going.
Yeah, this looks really good. I will see this August 18th.
And I will say, my teenage niece wrote me about how excited she was for this. And that hasn't been true of a DC movie ever. I'm trying to think of one that she was excited about, but she is so excited for this character. Like, this is a character that a lot of young people really connect to, and I'm excited that it's there for them now.
That's awesome. I'm going to go back and read the issues of Graduation Day that I have.
Got it. Start it's, from yeah, the last one is coming out. I think it's about to hit DC Infinite soon. So it's a great time to catch up.
Sweet. I might just wait till the end then. If it's one more?
Yeah. Yeah. One more.
Oh yeah. I'll just wait the one more and then I'll do the whole thing.
It's so good. I love that comic. I can't, it's one of my favorites of all time, honestly.
Awesome. Here we are, excited about a DC movie coming out.
Yeah. Look at us.
Feels good. I feel good about this. I feel like this is a good place to end the podcast. We'll talk about the books that were looking forward to this week. Bob, what do you have on your list, sir?
Poison Ivy, number 11, of course.
Mm-hmm. The GLAAD award winning, I think you mean.
Yes. Scarlet Witch, number 4. Avengers War Against Time, number 4, by Paul Levitz, Alan Davis. We have Saga 63 is this week. It got pushed back. And Love Everlasting, number 6, Tom King and Elsa Chartier.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, what's in the pool?
I think Saga also. Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number 2. I think Mosley, number 3. Flawed, number 6. Icon versus Hardware, number 2, comes out. And there's an Image, number 1, called Junkrabbit. That looks interesting.
Yeah.
I think Scarlet Witch and Immortal X-Men will also come out this week. So we'll see.
Nice. Chris, what are you looking forward to?
Heartstopper's back.
Oh,
I'm so excited.
I saw that last night.
Oh, I am so excited. I am ready. Oh my God. I can't wait. That's it. I'm just going to literally be probably start from the beginning and read all like 50 issues of Heartstopper again.
It goes quick.
It does go quick. It goes
very quick.
But there is a lot of them.
Yeah, there is. There is a lot of them. For me, I guess Batman 134 and Poison Ivy come out, but that means it's Poison Ivy 10 and Batman 133 for me on the app. Mm-hmm. Scarlet Witch number 4, of course. Flawed number 6 is apparently coming out. I Hate This Place number 7. Aaron mentioned Junkrabbit number 1. Kaya number 7 I'm going to pick up. Love Everlasting number 6. One of these days I'll read it. Saga number 63. Stillwater 18 and Where Monsters Lie number 3. I know there's one or two that I'm forgetting, but whatever. That'll be for next week.
That's a lot of books.
Yeah, that's enough. Definitely enough. Yeah, and I might check out that Teenage Wasteland Kurt Pierce book. I know it's ending in like another issue or two, but I don't know. We'll see what the deal is. Maybe I'll dive in there and find out what's what. Bob, you have a closing statement thingy.
Yeah, I do, and it's both sad and uplifting at once. So let me just go for it. We're recording on April 3rd, and on an April 3rd, which was an Easter Sunday many, many years ago, with our game studios, my dad passed under pretty bad circumstances. I'll go for it. He had had a stroke, and he was in the hospital, and I went in to visit him on Easter Sunday. And it was, I walked into his room and discovered him covered in a sheet.
Aww.
That said, the positive and the beauty of all that is, it was, as a sickly little boy, and I had to go for allergy shots every week and the doctor all the time. And to my mom and dad's credit, it was, well, reading was a thing that even kids who can't go anywhere can kind of do. And we stopped on the way home after getting like 6 allergy shots or whatever. You stopped at the local candy store and get an egg cream and buy some comic books. My dad, I'd be home sick by myself and he would stop at the store and buy books, comics that he knew I would love. And that continued even to when I was a teenager. And so much of what I bring to what we do here, and not to slight my mom, my dad and I were like this team on Saturdays on the way to the doctor and the candy store and the stationery and so on. I'm here because of my dad. There's a lot of him in me. There's all of him in me. And I just want to say thanks.
Oh, that's really sweet.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's lovely, Bob. Thank you for sharing.
Sure. Now I'm a mess, but okay. I'll have another drink and I'll be okay.
All right. Well, I'll get us out of here so that we can maybe go have a nightcap. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. This was a fun one.
Yeah.
As always, you could send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter. I actually tweeted something the other day.
I saw it. I was very proud.
It's happening. It's happening, folks. But if you really want to interact with us, definitely go and check us out on Hive at Talking Comics. And of course, on Instagram, Talking Comics Podcast. We understand that a few of you have been reaching out over there, which is fantastic. Both Chris and Aaron have been doing an awesome job keeping up on that stuff. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Still the old fashioned email, Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com.
And Aaron, what is your information?
AJMS70 on Instagram.
Chris?
Linktree.com/TheMythOfPsyche.
Hooray! I am at @dead_anchoress. Bronwyn is at @ShinyBabyB. Joey is at @JoeyBricino. And John is John P. Burkle online, I think. I need to write this down.
Every time.
Every damn time.
Every day.
It's so rare. I can't keep track of his stuff. He had it and then he didn't have it. And then he had like a secret one that we all found out about because he posted something about people swimming and he got caught.
That was old school. He's in the Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
You can send him a pigeon.
Get a tomato can with some string. He'll be good to go.
I've heard smoke signals might work.
Yes.
Okay.
Come to John and I's cult meetings. You can talk to him there.
There you go. There you have it.
Do you have the sneakers? Are the sneakers optional or?
Oh, the sneakers are optional, but you absolutely have to wear the robe.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. I've got the robe. I'm good.
Okay, good. Come join us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. Be excellent to each other. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued.